another Robert E. Callahan story of Indian trails winding from tribe to tribe 100 years ago. The old trapper telling stories of the lone Indian.
Yes, folks, this is the old trapper speaking. I guess I'll tell you a story about the Black Hills of South Dakota. 40 miles long, 60 miles wide, and it forms one of the most unusual freaks of nature in all the world. Fantastic canyon, temple, spiral dome, and castle of solid rock carved in so many ways that Dead Man Canyon, as seen from a distant hill, is like an ancient city in ruins. You know, folks, nowhere on earth can one find such color, freak, and form. And my story was written in Dead Man Canyon. It was the rendezvous of Sitting Bull in 1874, 5, and 6. You see, right here under a huge sheltering boulder protruding from a canyon wall of blue and gold is the council ground on which Sitting Bull planned the custom massacre. As I sit here thinking of why the Indian went on the warpath, I turn to see Red Hawk. He's a human model in clay. Red Hawk is 98 years of age and has never worn a costume of any kind except a narrow waistband of beaver hide. Kind of belongs to the nudist colonies, I guess. At any rate, his reason for being nude was made at birth. When Red Hawk was born, the first object his mother saw was a tiny newborn hawk. And you know, because the hawk was free of any feather, she named her little papoose Red Hawk. And she taught him to go through without skin or blanket. Yes, sir, Red Hawk was to go through life without a skin or blanket of any kind except his own red hide. You see, Red Hawk is 6 feet 2 inches, and you know he's amazing in mind and body. He has a costume made out of porcupine hide, bound together with the sinew of beaver and eagle feet. He has a headgear of porcupine quills and over 200 eagle feathers. You know, a headgear handed down from father to son. But here in the cave home in which Red Hawk has lived for more than 50 years, the porcupine bonnet has been untouched. It was because I spoke so much of Indian philosophy and a love for nature that Chief Porcupine brought me the headgear and wanted me to see and understand it. And as he began making signs, all of which I fully understood, his eyes were full of memory. Well, sir, there was no reason for the Custer massacre, he said. Custer's entire band of 376 people were killed in that fight. No reason for any war. You know, people who live outdoors and who love trees and flowers and birds and the beauty of nature, why, they never want a fight. They see so much beauty in life, they seek to build, not destroy. The breeding place, folks, for ideas of war is around some banker's council table downtown, in the Wall Street broker's office, and in the gambling room of a luxurious ocean liner. And sometimes it's around the dining room of a political millionaire. War would be unknown if man-made laws made men live in the open spaces half the year. You know, as Red Hawk continued to talk, I thought that was pretty good philosophy. I soon learned that Chief Red Hawk had not made his home in the Black Hills all these years. He had seen the opening of the gold rush in the town of Deadwood, the wildest town in America during the early 70s. But of course, nowadays, it's a modern, progressive little city. And you know, he had been to so many Indian villages in his life. Red Hawk had traveled across the country so many times, and he had learned a great deal about the white man's progress. The Custer Massacre was ordained to be, he said to me. You know, it was the last great stand of the Indian, a fight in which the white man was to learn just how cunning and brave and how daring the Indian could be. You know, that was the kind of a chant that Red Hawk did for me that day in the cave. You know, he says, many treaties were made on paper to protect the Indian, but they were broken before the ink was dry on the paper. The treaties promised food and clothing to the Sioux, the Cheyenne, and the Omahas, but as their rations were shipped to the Army Fort, the traders, the trappers, and prospectors got the best food, and the Indian, well, he took what was left. You know, in many cases, where an Indian made complaint, he was arrested, flogged, and then he was put in iron chains or locked up for a week or more. And you see, as time went on, the Indian became angry. He became hungry, and some were actually starving. Well, next came the discovery of gold in the Black Hills. Every foot of this ground belonged to the Indian, Red Hawk said. Yes, sir. Yet the roving, greedy prospectors came with cannon and new man-made laws, and the Indian had to leave our fight. And then, you know, Red Hawk looked at me and he says, did my people fight? How did we? Well, the Custer Massacre ought to be that answer. You know, in the thick of that fight, a pale face rode his horse right up to where I stood. I had lost my tomahawk and my only weapon was a knife. A pale face shot me in the shoulder, and as I fell, he tried to make his horse stomp me in the dirt. But the horse fell with his neck against my open knife. I could have killed that horse with one lunge of the blade. But did I kill the horse? No. I patted the pony on the head. It rolled off the white man's whose legs were broken, and his gun had fallen from his hand. Well, I took his gun, but I did not kill him. No, sir, I wouldn't kill a crippled man. No. Only a coward would do that, and the Indian never is a coward. So I rose to my bleeding feet in pain, and from my skin pouch I offered to aid my dying enemy. Well, as I bent down to ease his thirst and pain, another soldier rushed up, and he pointed the rifle point blank at me and fired. Then he mounted his horse and rode away, shouting he had killed another red dog. Well, realizing I had only a flesh wound on the neck, I looked around, and the pale face who had been crushed by his fallen pony was pleading for water. Now, did I kill him and shout my victory? No. No Indian will kill that way. I gave the dying pale face more water. I took my war robe, and I made a pillow, and I put it under his head. And then I took one more look at the man who had tried to kill me. I knew he could not survive. So I got to my feet. I rushed on and on, my arm bleeding, my neck bleeding, my heart bent on the enemy in a free, fair fight. And that is the way we fought, and that is why we won the most bitter battle of Indian wars in all of America. That was the Custer Massacre, folks, a terrible thing. Our scouts had told us that 5,000 army men were to meet us in that valley of death. But if Major Reno and Custer had carried out their orders, the fight would have been a bigger loss. But like all cases of life, when people boast and become arrogant and think only of themselves, the day will soon come when they must pay. Yes, pay the price of injustice. For the price of cold injustice is trouble, sometimes death. And now, Red Hawk concluded, the war club is only a memory. The flashing arrow, the white man's souvenir. And the tomahawk, a relic of bygone days. But the pipe of peace is the only sacred thing the Indian has. So out here each night, I do a love chant for the great spirit and thinking of my peace pipe. This is the old trapper, folks, saying goodbye again, just as the Indian did. Yo-ho, yo-ho. I'll be seeing you.